Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Glad you're back with me. And I got to address a couple of topics that I've had come up here recently. I get this question a lot. And it comes up not only when I do a seminar, but I also have it when I meet with people. There's a lot of confusion, and I've talked about this on previous programs, so if you've been a long-time listener, bear with me, but I'll give you a couple of new things I think that you'll find very interesting. It's on the subject of annuities. Now, the thing that people get twisted up, let me just hit it right up front. The thing that people get twisted up about with annuities is there are four kinds. There's not just one thing called an annuity, okay? And I've talked about this before. I talk about it in my book, How to Get Great Advice, Avoid Scams, and the Secrets to a Secure Retirement. But variable annuity. Okay, there are four kinds, and that's where some of the confusion comes from. One of the types of annuities is called a variable annuity. And I'm going to talk about this with you a little bit today because I've had this come up recently where, in fact, I got two specific individuals that have come in to meet with me. I reviewed their portfolio, no charge, no obligation to do that. I reviewed their portfolio. Both of them had variable annuities. These are two separate couples. First one comes in, they have a variable annuity. They got it a number of years ago. I do my analysis. I look at fees. I look at the investments. And what I find is the variable annuity that they have, unbeknownst to them, which is very often the case, they're paying over 3.5% a year for the variable annuity. No clue. No idea that it was costing that much. I dig a little deeper. There are different funds available inside a variable annuity. They're called subaccounts. And they're like mutual funds. But to my regulator friends out there, I know they're called subaccounts. That's the technical name for them. But they're a lot like mutual funds inside of the annuity. Now, with a variable annuity, there's going to be a set number of funds available at any given time. It's not usually that many. And often I find that maybe they were good funds at one point or another, but a lot of times they're lower rated funds. So it's not unusual for me to see them be a 1, 2, or maybe a 3-star mutual fund or subaccount. So the ratings aren't always that good. Sometimes they can be better, but not always that good. So there can be some challenges with a variable annuity. Now, they can have their place in a financial plan for somebody, but the thing I want to get across to you, the number one thing that people seem to get twisted up about with variable annuities, and this person that came in, as well as the second one that I mentioned before, had the same misunderstanding. The number one challenge or misunderstanding I'm seeing right now with a variable annuity is that people think, you ready? People think that they are safe, that they are principal protected. Now, that is not true. A variable annuity, by definition, is a security. A security, by definition, as it is under our regulatory environment and how they are marketed, how they are sold, how they are available in our marketplace. A security is something that has risk. That's the inherent definition. So a variable annuity, when you put your money into a variable annuity, your principal is not secure unless you're putting all of it into a fixed account. Okay, variable annuities do make a money market or stable value or fixed interest rate account available inside of the annuity, but rarely do I see people use that. So, and if you wanted to do that, you're better off in something else that pays more interest than the rate that's available in most variable annuities for a fixed rate. But the confusion lies in that people think either because it's an annuity that the principal is secure, not true with a variable annuity, your money is at risk. Again, it's invested in those subaccounts that are a lot like mutual funds. The insurance company does not guarantee your principal. That may be available from another type of annuity, but not with a variable annuity. Now, one more step, okay? Bear with me. The thing that people get really confused about, and there's two reasons for this. One is complexity, and the second is because it's maybe not always explained very well, and that is this feature called an income rider that is available under a lot of variable annuities that are available in the marketplace today. I know that's a mouthful, but these programs are available as an optional rider or feature on a variable annuity. And what that does is if you put money into a variable annuity and you say, I want the income guarantee, or the advisor tells you that's something you should have, what that does is it gives you the ability to draw income from the annuity at some point in the future. Now, that's great. I like the idea of income in the future. I like the idea that it could be guaranteed for the rest of your lifetime. That's all good. We're good here so far, right? But that may come at one, a high cost, Number two, you may have to do what's called annuitization, which is a fancy word for giving the money to the insurance company and they will pay you the rest of your life, but there's nothing left for your heirs. Or you can get the income and then there might be something left over, but it depends on how the contract performs and the rest of the features in the contract. All of that is not the same, and this is where the confusion comes in. All of that is not the same as protecting your principal. In other words, if you put your money in and it's invested in the stock market through these sub-accounts and the market does really well, great. But if it doesn't and your account falls in value, your annuity falls in value, say you put 100 in and it's only worth 80 and you want your money back, it's based on the 80. The income feature where the company will pay the money out to you over your lifetime, that's nice. But that's not the same as protecting your principal. Now, I know I sound like I'm splitting hairs. Maybe this seems very nuanced. And, you know, David, that sounds like a lot of talk. You know, here's a message that's really important. And I want to tell you this because I've seen this trip people up way too often. If you have a variable annuity or you're thinking about getting one, don't confuse the ability to get an income from that variable annuity that is protection of your principal. If you really want protection of your principal, there are other financial vehicles that I think can do a better job. Let me give you some examples of those. If you said to me, David, okay, look, I've got this money. I want it to give me income. Okay, let's talk about income. Where can you get income on your money? Well, you might do bonds, a diversified bond portfolio. You might consider one of the other types of annuities, an immediate annuity, maybe a fixed annuity that can give you income. Those are good choices. Nothing wrong with those. Depends on your circumstances and your situation, which one might make sense. You might want more liquidity, so you might want to do the bonds, maybe some short-term bond funds to draw income from. There's a lot of different things you could do for income in addition to or instead of a variable annuity. What if you want to protect your money? You say, David, I want to protect my money. I don't want to lose it. That's why I'm buying this annuity. That's why I'm putting my money into it. Well, a variable annuity doesn't protect your money. We covered that, right? Okay, what else would you do? Well, you might do a fixed annuity where the money is safe. It's not invested in the market. The insurance company has to put that money into certain types of investments and guarantee you, if it's a fixed annuity, they guarantee your principal. And then your interest might be based on a fixed rate, or it might vary according to a rate set every year by the company, or it might vary according to what the stock market does. That might be indexed. It might be linked to a stock market index. Those types of programs have become very popular because they protect your principal and give you the upside potential of getting part of what the market does. So there are a lot of things you might consider if you're really trying to protect your money. And nothing wrong with old school CD, money market, savings account. Yes, I know you don't make a lot, but your money's safe. So the vehicle follows what you're trying to accomplish. So I would say if you're thinking about getting a variable annuity, these are some things to consider. Because there's lots of different parts to this. Now, while we're on variable annuities, I mentioned they're securities. They are inherently a risk product. You need to be clear about why you want the annuity, if it's for income or safety, or if you really... Now, if you say, hey, look, I want pure growth. I just want to have this be an aggressive part of my overall portfolio. A variable annuity might serve in that capacity. The other thing that's interesting about variable annuities, or something that a lot of people don't realize, is they are not a commodity. They are not interchangeable. Some have more fees, some have less. Some are have a lot more investment choices, some have less. And they are not available, all of them, from the same people all the time. So in other words, if you want to get a variable annuity, it's going to pay you to shop around. They are available through broker dealers, stock brokerage firms. Brokerage firms are called, and they are both a security and insurance product. They are available through the broker dealers, and these are like distributors who have contracts with insurance companies. They're called selling agreements. So ABC brokerage firm down the street, and I won't use real names because that would distort what I'm talking about, but just say you got ABC brokerage firm, they may have contracts or agreements, selling agreements with six different insurance companies to distribute their variable annuities. They do that under the terms of that agreement. They might only have access to six and that's it. What if there's number seven you want? Well, number seven might not be available from that one, so you need to shop around and look at different ones if you really want a variable annuity. And the broker dealer does this because they get paid by the insurance company to distribute their products. It's kind of like a car dealership. If you go to the car dealer, they're not going to have every possible car on the lot. They're going to have a couple of key manufacturers, the car companies, and they're going to get paid for doing what? Selling the cars. So that's how it works with the variable annuity. So if you are looking for a specific type of vehicle for your finances, then you may need to check with different dealerships. So they're not a commodity. They're not all the same, and not every brokerage firm has them to make available. It'll be based on those agreements for distributing and selling those products. And the broker dealer gets paid a commission for doing that, which then they share with the stockbroker or their registered rep, that's the other name for it, who work for the broker dealer. They are employees of the broker dealer, and they have a set arrangement of variable annuities that are available from that company. So if you meet with the broker, he or she may have six different insurance companies that are five or four or two or one that is available in that category of investment called a variable annuity. So just be aware of these things and be aware that a variable annuity in and of itself is not a principal protected safe vehicle, again, unless you're putting all of it into the fixed account, which you might be wise to look at other options if that's what you want to do. So I'm glad I got that off my chest for you. Let me grab a quick break. I'll come back, and I've got something a little softer, a little maybe not so heavy duty, but I think you'll find it interesting. I got a chance to speak at Career Day. And what does playing Monopoly have to do with getting financial advice? Come back and you'll find out.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Hey, I'm back. Listen, I got to speak at Career Day. You know, it was kind of neat. My daughter invited me, my 11-year-old invited me to come and participate. It wasn't really an invitation. It's like, Dad, you're going to do this, right? Okay. So I got to speak at Career Day at Tomoka Elementary, right here in Ormond Beach, Florida, and it was pretty cool. I got signed up, and my daughter, she's part of the little student government, so she showed me around, took me to the classrooms, and I got the letter beforehand from the principal saying, okay, here's what you need to do if you're going to come and speak to these fourth and fifth graders. You need to know that you need to do a couple things. Number one, you need to use props. That's important when you speak at Career Day. You got to have props. And you need to be prepared for the unexpected questions. They're going to look at the world a little differently than you will. So be prepared for questions that are a little different. And above all, though, impart to the students the importance of honesty, integrity, character in doing your job. And I said, okay, I can do that. So this is kind of fun, and I've been wanting to share the story with you. I think you'll like it. So, and it relates to, of course, financial planning, because that's what I talk to the students about, but I think you'll find this interesting, and it was kind of neat after I reflected on this experience I had. So, first of all, it was very exciting. It was a lot of fun. It'd been a while since I'd been in front of students like this, little fourth and fifth graders. They see the world so differently, little hungry minds. And they did ask, they were innocent, but they were some unexpected questions. It was refreshing. One student got really fixated on all the possible scenarios that involve car insurance, and what if this happened, and what if that happened, and what if you had a... So I imagine he or she, well, this was a he, but I imagine this student must have had a recent experience in his family about car insurance, and maybe somebody got into an accident because he had a lot of questions about it. I wasn't prepared for that. I was going to talk about financial planning. But anyway, so I got in front of the class. I did three presentations, and by the time I got to the third classroom, I have to confess my presentation had those kids up on their desks like the Dead Poets Society. They were just loving it. No, not really. But they did like my prop. And my prop for my presentation was I brought a Monopoly game set, the game board, the playing game where you buy properties and you have money and you build houses and you try to put everybody else out of the game to have a Monopoly, right? So I brought my Monopoly set, and I used that as my prop for the presentation. They also did like the free pencils I brought. Those were cool. And I did not realize that the pencils, if you rub them, they change color. Well, guess what? I learned that by the third presentation that I gave those pencils out at the end of my talk. Otherwise, I lost them halfway through. So I brought the board out and I said to the class, I said, how many of you have played Monopoly at least 10 times? Every hand went up. I followed with, how many of you have played 50 times? Most of the hands stayed up. How about 500 times? All the hands went back up. I realized that nobody was going to lose this bravado test. So I had to put an end to it because, you know, look, I only had like 20 minutes with each class. So I had to put an end to it. And I said, okay, how many of you have played 1 million times? That did it. I shut them down. I had to put the kibosh on the fifth graders and their enthusiasm for raising their hand for who's played the most. So I asked him this, and I think you will love this analogy. I said, how good would somebody be at playing Monopoly if they had played 1 million times? Now think about that. 1 million times playing. And then, of course, the hands went flying back up, waving and flailing at me to get my attention and to get the answer to the question. And they all just jumped in. They'd be really good. They'd be too good. It wouldn't be fair. They'd be the boss. One kid said that. And then, I love this one. Another kid yells out, my cousin says he's done that. I mean, they're just enthusiastic. I love it. So I acknowledged everybody. I said, well, let me ask you this. What if that person that had played 1 million times sat beside you while you played? What would that be like? Would that be cool? Would you like that? That's like they had practiced. Oh, yeah. They all started screaming. They loved that. Now it was okay, right? It was fair as long as this million-time player was sitting beside them giving them advice. Yeah, I said to the students, I said, what if that person with this million game experience could whisper in your ear and tell you the best move to make each time it was your turn? What deal to cut? What house or property to buy? When to trade? And on what terms to trade? I'll give you three railroads for boardwalk, or I'll build a house, or I'm going to try to get Baltic and Mediterranean, and I'm going to try to get hotels on those as quickly as I can. What if you had that advantage? And they're like, okay. I said, well, that is what a financial planner does. That's what I do every day working with people, but instead of it being a game board or pretend money, or pretend property, or pretend houses, it's real money. It's real money. It's helping those people that come in to see me know when to make those decisions. Now, it's not that I've done this 1 million years or 1 million times, or that any advisor has, but the analogy and the point, obviously, is that if you've done something a lot, you know, in financial circuits or in circles or in expert coaching and some of the business schools out there, they talk about becoming an expert means you've done something 10,000 times or had 10,000 hours in it. And that's where they attribute Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. Bill Gates apparently had access to a computer when he was in his early teens and he was able to spend all this time with it. The point is that if you do something a lot, that's what can create opportunity for success and being good at it and being able to help others. It doesn't come from just reading a book, although getting the basic knowledge is very important. So I told the students that's what financial planners do, is we help people figure out what to do with their money. And we do that out of learning, of course, and knowing the rules of the game because we've read. In fact, we've memorized those instructions for playing Monopoly as it relates to the game of life. But we also have experienced it, and we've seen what works and what doesn't. So that was my message, and I know they got it. It clicked. The light bulbs went off because the next set of questions that I was asked was, okay, well, how much can a financial planner make, David? We want to know. I piqued their interest. They thought it was very interesting. So that's what Monopoly has to do with financial planning. Now, I need to grab another break. When I come back, I'm going to tell you the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say, on the most important part, which the principal asked me to talk about, which was integrity and honesty and character, and how that part of the job is important for the students to understand. Stay right there.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back, and I'm talking to you about Career Day. Okay, it was fun. The other part that the principal asked me to talk about, I kind of mentioned before the break, was that, you know, impart to the students the importance of character and integrity and honesty. And you know what? That's more important than all the rest of it. I share with the students, I said, you know, it's going back to that analogy of the Monopoly player. It doesn't do you much good if the person that has played a million times whispering in your ear the best move to make if they don't have your best interest in heart. Let's say that Monopoly player is winking at the other player across the table and tells you to do something that doesn't help you but helps the other player. How much good is that? How much good is that million game experience to you now? Not much, right? In fact, you almost be better. Wouldn't you be better off working with somebody or having somebody advise you in this game of Monopoly that maybe has only played 500 times but is giving you their best advice? You know, there's probably some sage somewhere or famous person or celebrity or somebody's made a quote famous, and I didn't go and try to research this to find it for you, but somebody's probably made some famous quote that says something like, you're better off getting good advice from somebody that is that's giving you what's best for you or the advice for you as opposed to great advice from somebody who doesn't have your best interest at heart. In other words, good advice from somebody that is trying to do well for you and means well, maybe as opposed to perfect advice from somebody who doesn't have your best interest at heart. You follow me? So I use that though, and I talked to the students about it. I said, you know, the most important part about financial planning, more than knowing everything, knowing the best financial products or knowing the best advice to give, the most important thing is giving good advice that we feel is best for the person. And you know, that plays right into something that I've talked about on this program and you may have heard me talk about before. And it's this whole subject, and it's back in the news again. So I'll talk a minute about it. We'll kind of end our story here about Monopoly and move back over a little bit to the more the real world. Of late, we're seeing things in the news talking about this fiduciary standard. It's a little puzzling. I don't know why it's come up now, but apparently there's a renewed interest and question about helping the public understand the difference between, and I applaud this, I think it's great, I just don't understand why it's now, but understand the difference between a fiduciary and somebody who is just acting as a salesperson. It's bubbled up in an interesting area in the 401k, the employer plan or employer marketplace. So, for example, you have a 401k at work, and there is a broker or advisor who has brought this package of investments and this product to the employer to make available to you through your 401k plan. So, for example, that might be an insurance company has a program that is put in place at the employer, and then you can sign up for investment choices within just that one program. Or it might be from a mutual fund company, or it might be from a variety of things. But there's an advisor or a broker involved with that met with the employer, maybe did a group meeting, maybe does ongoing education if they're good, and they are there to help you. There is a lot of talk right now in financial circles, and it's even getting some legislative traction is being talked about in Washington about what type of responsibility that person has to you and to the plan, but to you as the investor participating in that 401k or 403b or 457, whatever type of retirement plan it is, what type of responsibility do they have to you? The current law, the current rule, is that they don't have a lot. They don't really have a lot of responsibility to you. Their job is to provide this and make it available. And the employer, your 401k provided, the company that provides it to you, they are called the plan sponsor. They've got a lot of responsibility to you, the employee who participates in the plan. If you don't like your choices, you actually talk to them about it. And maybe you don't have great choices. Maybe that you don't get much education. Well, that's a whole other subject maybe we'll get to in a second. But the point is that there's a lot of talk about the responsibility, and there is a new renewed advocacy or effort to hold these people who are advising and making these plans available to the employer, to hold them to this higher level of care and responsibility called the fiduciary standard, where the fiduciary standard says is that they've got to do what's best for you, not just what they can sell or make available or convince the employer to provide. And I'm not trying to be callous or negative there, but that is the standard. Either it's a fiduciary standard of doing what's best for the client, or it's whatever is suitable and acceptable, and that everybody says, okay, that's good, that'll work, that fits, okay. It may not be the best solution, but it's good. Now, if you find yourself, while that's all being worked out, in the meantime, if you find yourself not getting much direction on your retirement plan or your 401k or whatever it is, you've got a couple of options. Number one, you can be the squeaky wheel and get some grease and say to your employer, hey, look, when's the last time that broker was in our office to come in here and give us some education? Can we have them back? I've got questions. Or can you call them and talk to them and get some individualized advice? I mean, they're getting paid. If there's a broker associated with the 401k, they're getting paid. I think you are well within your right to say, I'd like a little help. Or if you don't get much traction there, maybe, again, don't take it as negative. I'm just using this as an example. If the broker that put the plan in place is the owner of the company's golfing buddy and they play every week and he ain't going nowhere and that plan's going to stay there, then maybe you got to be a little bit more self-determining. Maybe you need to go outside of the plan. Did you know you can get help from an advisor not associated with your 401k? You can find somebody who works on a fee basis to advise you. And there's lots of different names for this, but you can get fee-based advice. I've done this a number of times for people where they come to me and I can give them advice and charge them either by the hour or charge them a percentage for telling them what to do with their 401k, what funds to pick, and we can monitor it. We can go in. We go right in with the username and password, and we can check the account. We can make changes so that you don't have to be bothered with it and you can know that somebody's paying attention. You have options, is my point. Don't settle. And as I told the class, when you are looking and making this choice, I told those fifth graders, character, integrity, honesty, all of that is more important than anything else. So, and ironically, that's what this fiduciary discussion is all about. Honesty, integrity, doing what's right, doing what's best for the person, what's best for them first, then everything else follows. Hope that helps. Good stuff. Be sure to tune in next time. Thanks for being with me.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.